The date is December 23rd, 1994, and we are watching Street Fighter. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me for the summer, doing his summer residency, the Vega to my M. Bison. Nice.
Hi, I'm Aaron Knowles. That was my Vega.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I went bad guys. I figured, why not? I mean, yeah. I guess I could have done the Carlos Blanca to my Guile if I wanted to. But Raul Julia, I mean, his last movie, he's cool as shit. So I'm like, yeah, you know, I got to get an M. Bison in there in the opening.
You do.
Yeah.
With his Emperor Electricity.
Yeah, absolutely. So this week, we're looking back at December 1994, when the movies and theaters were Disclosure, Dumb and Dumber, Legends of the Fall, Richie Rich. Here's a bonus, because it is like a Christmas movie. Mixed Nuts, a Steve Martin classic, if you've ever seen that. And of course, our movie for today, Street Fighter, which earned $99.4 million on a $35 million budget.
That's pretty good.
Not bad.
It's not bad.
Tripled
it. It's considered a blockbuster if it doubles it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know if I'd call this one a blockbuster.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. We have a discussion ahead of us.
I cannot wait. All right. If you were to ask me if it's okay to be worried about spoilers, you know what my answer would be? Sure, you can.
Oh, yes. Nice. Nice.
Thank
That's
you.
A good
Thank
one.
You.
Yeah.
I've been saving that. But yeah, spoilers ahead on this movie.
You betcha. Yeah, this is like almost 30-year-old movie. Well, I've got a plethora, Aaron, of taglines here that I found. I've got 10.
is that a record?
I think I've had a couple more than that, but that's got to be in like the top 10 of taglines that I've had. Yeah. Well, number one, the ultimate battle.
Is it? It's a street fight.
Well, I'm going to rebut you there, Aaron, with number two, the ultimate battle is about to begin.
I mean, you keep saying battle and ultimate, but it's not sinking in.
Are you sure about that? Because number three, the ultimate challenge begins this Christmas in theaters everywhere.
Man, we got some key words they're using. They're like, oh, they'll use the word ultimate and battle. They tested really well.
Well, that's quite possible, because number four, get ready for the ultimate street fight.
I would prefer that one, I think.
Yeah. Number five, the fight to save the world is on.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Number six, the fight to save the world begins 12/23/94.
Rather specific.
Very. Yeah. Number seven. I have a feeling number seven and number eight were like character posters, just like a big old banner of one of the characters, because number seven is the problem, whereas number eight is the solution.
The problem is buying the ticket. The solution is getting your money back.
There you go. So that's what the posters were of.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, one of the characters going sorry with his hands out to the side, you know, like,
the problem is Guile or Van Damme sitting in a theater seat eating popcorn. The solution is Van Damme with a sad face getting a refund.
Coked up, apparently, actually, from what I've read, is that he was pretty coked up in this movie. Well, number nine, adventure is the name of the game. And I would like to say Street Fighter is the name of the game.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
I don't think Adventure's ever been in a Street Fighter title, ever.
No, yeah. There's been like Turbo, but never Adventure. Yeah.
There's been two, but never Adventure.
Well, number 10, I mean, I do like to, when I have a long list especially, I do like to save my personal favorite for last. That's my benefit that I get for being the one that looks up these taglines. Number 10, this Christmas, shop early. The streets won't be safe.
That sounds like a domestic terrorism threat.
Or it sounds maybe like a Santa's sleigh type movie.
Yeah.
Gremlins could have used this title.
Very true, because they did. They even used a what do you call it? Like a street shovel truck. What
are the snowplow?
Snowplow. Why can't that's a new name for it? The street shovel truck.
Yeah. Rebrand, guys. Like,
yeah,
what are you
get it together.
Yeah.
That's such a better name.
And then, yeah, you know, you can change Zambonis to be, you know, like ice mopping trucks.
You know. So there you go. That's the IMT 3000. It's like the newest model.
Yeah. So we've got a lot of ultimate battles. We've got street fights. We've got fights to save the world. But we don't have a very good description of this movie, so I think we need to go to Aaron and get a 60-second synopsis.
I hope you're ready for this.
Oh, I can't wait.
I have a great idea. Let's take a video game with nearly zero lore and backstory and assign some of the biggest no-name actors and a few superstars and see what we can make out of it. That's a great idea. What's it called? Street Fighter. Oh, I've played that. Have you? Not this one. Much like Dalzim's scientific experiment, which we'll discuss later in this review, we're going to throw in some interesting ingredients like Van Damme as Guile, Raul Julia as M. Bison, Ming-Na Wen as Chun-Li, and really, who gives a shit about the rest? I mean, Kylie Minogue is Cammy, and we all love Cammy. What do you get? You get a huge, grotesque, misunderstood reason that video game movies were thrown into the trash upon delivery. Sadly, Street Fighter feels like it could have been something with like some actual potential, and it just didn't live up to it. Really, the movie's about Guile, who leads a ragtag army in Shadaloo City, which who knows where it's like a Malaysia type, you know, country, which includes, you know, like I said, Kylie Minogue, who helps lead. They enlist the help of the gun runners, Ryu and Ken, who basically try and sell toys to Sagat. Because he works with M. Bison, which is odd connection. But anyways, it works. It works because they shoot Guile. I was going to say they shoot Van Damme, but Van Damme's not Van Damme. Van Damme's Guile. They shoot Guile, who really doesn't kick as much as you think he would in this movie, but he is amazing as Guile. Because I mean, if you remember the video game, Guile is like this very American, like, blonde haired dude, and then you got Van Damme with like this accent, and you're just like, sure, I'll accept it.
Well, because of that American flag tattoo.
Yes, exactly. So they work their way into M. Bison's inner circle in order to figure out M. Bison's plot, which come to find out is very remarkably like the MCU's first film, not the MCU's first film, but our first Avenger, Captain America's film, where Red Skull, you know, tries to make the ultimate super soldier and weapons, but with slightly more hijinks? I wasn't sure, but hijinks, okay? That's right, I said hijinks. So using the super soldier serum and some bad YouTube montages pipe right into the brain of Guile's best friend, who Guile completely just screwed over within the first 5 minutes of this film, by the way. We'll talk about that. Dr. Dalzim, not Yoga Master's flame-spitting Dalzim, but Dr. Dalzim, creates Blanka out of Guile's best friend, who absolutely does nothing in this movie. You want a good Blanka? Go watch Big Trouble in Little China. That's a good Blanka, okay? Anyways, this movie has some street fights, like one or two, but I don't really see any street fighters. We see, again, some big names from the game. We got Zangief, quick, change the channel, because he's a big dummy, and a few others. But in the end, Bison bites the dust. Forgive me for that one, Raul Julia. You know, rest his soul. And the good guys prevail and save the world from one single super soldier that Bison failed to create properly. To be continued? Spoiler alert, never.
Oh, well, not this particular universe, but I mean, yes. There is, of course, the infamous sequel. And Aaron, I'll tell you, I did extra credit and I did watch The Legend of Chun-Li, Street Fighter 2. Yes, yeah. I did. Yes, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, right now, we're here to talk about Street Fighter. Now, I mean, this is one that after I watched it, I said, I don't know if I've seen this. I'm still deciding whether I've seen this. I can't remember if back in 1994 I was one of the ones that decided to see it because I loved Street Fighter the game so much. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned at the tail end of our last episode, you know, I was not a Mortal Kombat player. I was a Street Fighter player.
Same.
So I can't remember if I was... Yeah, if I was one of the people that saw this movie and hated it and, like, just pushed it from my memory, because there were definitely things that were familiar. But on the other hand, I may have been one of those guys that heard the word of mouth and said, oh, you love the game, you'll hate the movie, and I never did see it. I couldn't remember, but I've seen it now. So either way, the familiar parts, you know, whether it was because I had seen the movie once or not, whatever. I've seen it now. But yes, I was a big Street Fighter 2 player. I mean, the hours that I put in on my Super Nintendo with Street Fighter 2 back in the day and Street Fighter 2 Turbo back in the day, a little bit of Street Fighter versus, you know, Capcom versus Marvel back in the day.
Yep.
You know, but, you know, I was one of those guys that never really went past the Street Fighter Alpha or anything like that. It was like, you know, future Street Fighters I was not as huge into. I don't know why. The moves where you're flying way too high in the air, I don't know. But yeah, Street Fighter was my game.
Slightly, you know, suspend your disbelief and for a moment while this guy does a helicopter kick across the screen.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah. But yeah, somehow Mortal Kombat has made it onto this show before Street Fighter, but it's, you know, at least Mortal Kombat I knew I hadn't seen. That was that was one of Colin's choices. So, you know, whatever. Here we are, Street Fighter.
Right on,
so,
Colin.
What's your experience? I mean, you say you're a big Street Fighter fan. Well, you know, tell me your Street Fighter history with the movie and the game.
I feel like we have like similar paths with the video game. I know for a fact that I've seen this movie, and I can tell you why, because I've seen it way too many times for as bad as it is. And
you know me,
I love a terrible movie.
Yeah.
And this is one of those movies that there's so many bad things to watch it and just laugh at.
True.
That it's a good time popcorn flick. You know, you put it on, and if you have a room full of gamer nerds, like, you guys can just make fun of the crap that's going on. And you and that's the thing, is like, you can be a Van Damme fan, you can be a Raul Julie fan, you could be just a Street Fighter fan and have fun. Anyways, I'm getting away from my point. My point is that I grew up watching this. I would say it was probably more of a guilty pleasure.
You lean into the camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did enjoy watching it quite a bit. I will say this. The game, again, probably the same as you, where I have not played a lot of the newer ones. I think there was one that came out on, I want to say it was like the 3DS. When that was big,
okay,
and I played that one, but really after that, like Street Fighter V, I haven't really played like any of the. There's like a Street Fighter VI, I think, is coming out soon, but yeah, I would probably play them. I just have no desire to go out and spend money on them. However, this movie will always be a permanent place in my brain,
in the cinema
category of my room. Not good cinema, but cinema.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So now here's the question. I mean, I've been burning to know the answer to this.
They have creams for that.
Well, they do. And some of them work. Who's your guy?
Oh, I was always Ryu.
Ryu. Me too.
Always
Holy
Ryu.
Shit. And like Ken was exactly the same, but you never played Ken.
Yeah.
It was
Ryu. He just looks so badass, and he had the headband and the gloves, the fingerless gloves.
Yeah.
And he'd always do that thing where he, like, turned his back to the screen and, like, looked over his shoulder, and his headband was, like, flowing in the wind. He just looked total badass.
Yeah, see, and I always hated that this movie, like, even whether I've seen it or not, I always hated the idea that this movie was told from Guile's perspective. I don't know why that bothered me, because I just always felt like Ryu is the guy. He's always top left corner of the box. I mean,
yeah, he's generally the one where I would say like majority of the films are from his perspective.
Yeah,
they're like his plight, you know, and the pursuit of becoming like, I don't even know if he wants to be the greatest fighter. I think he has like some other like personal reason. But yeah, that one was kind of a weird choice.
Well, see, Guile in the games always piss me off because he doesn't flip.
Yeah, he just
I'm like, not satisfied the by the jump if he does unless you do the flip. That's why I liked Ryu, is because he does a flip.
Yeah.
The other jump, it just doesn't feel as satisfying. It's like Super Mario Brothers 2. From that day on, I was always a Luigi player. If I ever have an opportunity to play Luigi, I'm Luigi. You know, Mario Kart or any game where it's two players, I'm Luigi. And it's because Luigi in Super Mario 2 is my favorite Luigi because he's got that big, tall jump.
Nice. Think that Mario Kart, I know we're getting way off topic here, but I love
right?
it.
Right? I know.
Mario Kart, I will forever be a Bowser player because I'm just a bully on the track. And I wish that there were more games, because there's like two games where you can play as Bowser. You can play in Mario Kart and then Smash Brothers. And that's really it, you know, and maybe like if you want to play like Mario Party, but I'm actually talking like an actual like video game. So I would love more games where you get to play as, you know, the King of the Koopas, King Bowser.
Yeah, that would be pretty rad. Absolutely. Well, okay, here we go. Let's jump into Street Fighter, because that's why we're here. Directed by Steven E. D'Souza, produced by Edward R. Pressman and Kenzo Sugimoto, and written by Steven E. D'Souza. He's got a lot of quality writing credits. He's got Die Hard and 48 Hours and Commando, and you can totally see how this script could have just been written as some generic dictator taking over a country and with a militia coming in, you know, story, and they're like, oh well, we could call that one Chun-Li and call that one
I feel like that's exactly what happened. They were like, hey, we're going to pay you like $10 million to write a script about, you know, like Chun-Li, Van Damme, these guys fighting against M. Bison. And he's like, oh, I think I can do that. And he's like, and in the back of his head, he's like, I got the perfect one. And he's just like assigning the characters to it.
Yeah. He pulls out this old dusty manuscript out of his bottom drawer, blows off the dust. Yeah. I've been waiting for this.
And cashes his check. And he's like, that was easy.
He hasn't even typed up a new cover page. He's just crossed it out with a pencil and written Street Fighter.
That would be a good graphic.
Yeah. Now, I do love... This is one thing that I always love in movies. I give Paramount huge credit for it all the time. I love when a movie takes the production, like they turn the logo somehow. The transition from production company. And so I liked how they did it in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did a really cool job with that. I don't know. I have so many like parts that I'm so excited to talk about in this movie, and I can't wait to get to them.
Well, let's want to kick off with cast. Want to go through this all star studded cast that we have.
Jeez, this cast. I mean, how could you? First off, the poster boy himself, Mr. You know, kicking it into high gear, Jean-Claude Van Damme as Colonel Guile.
Now, I mean, I love that you bring up how much, like, with heavy sarcasm, you're talking about how much Van Damme just embodies the character of Guile. But, yeah, I mean, he's missing the Johnny Bravo flat top.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what he needs.
That's what always bothered me.
And he's not blonde enough. Like, they didn't go for the full bleach job on him.
You know what's amazing, though, is how many movies... Where Jean-Claude Van Damme has played like an American service member type character, and he is not, you know, he speaks with such a thick accent.
Yeah. It's like how Arnold Schwarzenegger always has such an American name, like John Kimball. You know, it's like, oh, yeah. How about lean into the fact that he's Austrian? Yeah. No, and see, Jean-Claude Van Damme, I do have to say, I watched this movie and I'm like, God damn, he's a handsome man. I mean, it's been a while since I've watched a Van Damme movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, he is a good looking dude when you compare him to like the Stallones and Schwarzeneggers of the time.
It's very true. Very true. And like, the Chuck Norrises.
Yeah. Like they're not exactly dashing guys. This is one good looking son of a bitch.
Very, very true.
Even blonde, even with this weird ass fucking ashy blonde that he's got going on.
Looks like somebody frosted his tips.
I'm too busy looking at his dimples.
Next up, we got the departed Raul Julia. This was his final film. He played Bison, AKA Gomez Adams.
Oh, man.
You know, just.
He is my Gomez Adams, absolutely. Yeah. Stephen Lang was someone they wanted for this part.
Let's see what else he was in. Kiss of the Spider Woman. The Burning Season, Down Came a Blackbird, Havana. Not a lot of stuff, you know.
For me, Raul Julia is Adam's Family.
Yeah.
That's where he is in my heart.
For sure.
Yeah.
I always, for some reason, that's the one thing that always, like, becomes like an unsettled thought whenever I watch this movie. And I always like try, I don't know, like I take a little bit of a closer look every time at Raul Julia. And one thing that, you know, I just noticed about him, like in this, he kind of had like a, like his eyes were almost two different sizes. Like if you like look at him when he's wearing his hat, it kind of stands out a little bit. He's just an interesting looking guy, yeah. Not a bad looking guy, just an interesting looking guy.
Yeah.
And you know, unfortunately, he passed away, I want to say, from stomach cancer.
Yeah, it was. I think that's what it was. I know it was some form of cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, just like we talked about in year one, it's like, oh, poor Harold Ramis. That was his last movie. I mean, poor Raul Julia. It's like, oh. But he did this one for his kids.
Yeah,
or maybe,
exactly.
Or maybe it was his grandkids even.
Yeah. So. And then next up, we got Ming-Na Wen as Chun-Li, who for some reason... like it's still an amazingly attractive woman to this day.
She, I know she is, but young Ming.
Yes,
nah,
she is young.
Wen, yum. Yeah, she is definitely a very attractive woman in this one, and she has aged gracefully, absolutely. Mm. And I mean, she's someone that I think of now, right? Like I do not think of her young. It's like she sprang into my life in her 40s.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I've only ever known her in my 40s. Or her 40s, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
see, next...
I discovered this show. It's this is way off topic, but I came across this show on Tubi where it's celebrity bowling, and it's back from like 1975, right?
Yeah.
And it's celebrities of the time bowling. You got people like Bob Newhart and Jimmy J.J. Walker and shit like that. And so
really?
I was watching one the other day where it was Leslie Nielsen. And I'm looking at it, and it's like 1974 Leslie Nielsen. I'm like, he's a handsome man back then.
Yeah.
Right? And I got curious. And so I'm like, how old was Leslie Nielsen when he was bowling on this show? He was already 50. I'm like,
really?
I'm like, what the hell? Like, how old was Leslie Nielsen when he did Naked Gun? Holy shit. I didn't realize that. It's like Harrison Ford putting on the indie hat again. I mean, it's like, I never realized, because he was old my whole life.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's amazing. They still look younger than some of the older celebrities that we have now who are younger, you know, and it's like, it's crazy. Like they just aged so well. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was less chemicals in the food.
Yeah. But anyway, back to cast. Yeah. Then we get into like the B squad here.
Yeah. Well, I say B squad, but you know, we got Damien Chapa as Ken. He's kind of a recognizable face, but I didn't really pay. Ken doesn't really do much in this movie. I'm not really, like, you know, he tried to be kind of like a bit of a comedy relief.
Yeah.
You got Kylie.
He was trying to be the, who's the, Johnny Cage. He was trying to be the Johnny Cage of it, right? Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Kylie Minogue, who is
a character actually that Jean-Claude Van Damme turned down to play this part instead.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
He wouldn't have worked in that.
No.
Absolutely not.
Because of his accent.
He's not American. He's not an American, you know, martial artist.
Yeah.
So Kylie Minogue is Cammy, who.
Is not an actress.
But she did better than some of these, you know, actors on here.
But
This is like the weirdest lineup, because like they have Simon Callow as an A in official. I'm just gonna skip some of these that we have no idea who they are. But Byron Mann as Ryu, depending on where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Roshan Seth as Dalzim. That'll still always blow my mind. Let's see, Andrew Bryniarski as Zangief. Grand L. Bush as Balrog, Robert Mamone as Carlos Blanca, Miguel A. Nunez Jr., who we all recognize from some movie that we've seen, but you could never put a name to it. But you know this guy, like you know him. He played DJ, who he didn't even fight in this movie, but DJ is a fighter in the Street Fighter universe.
Yeah.
And then Greg Rainwater as T-Hawk, Kenya Sawada, who plays Captain Sawada. You just keep going down further. You got Jay Tavari as Vega.
I can't wait to hear you pronounce this one.
Yeah, Peter Navy to La Sopo, sure. As E Honda, and E Honda was like kind of like my number two.
Yeah.
Character. I loved E Honda. He was so good.
You know, back to Vega for a sec. They wanted Fabio.
I thought you were gonna say they wanted Van Damme.
Oh.
Fabio, I could see that.
Maybe
the guy they chose was a handsome dude.
He was a handsome dude.
Let's see, Wes Studi as Victor Sagat.
Yeah, and I remember him as Sphinx from Mystery Men.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's really. I'm gonna leave the rest of that. That's really name.
Everyone
of the game
else
right
is
there.
Just AN people. Yeah,
yeah. Cook number four, studio news anchor. Christine M. Walton, thank you for being Bison's computer. I appreciate you.
Fantastic. Nailed it.
Man.
Yeah, okay.
It's,
well,
it's
get
like
into
a
it.
A bunch of heavy hitters, man.
Yeah.
Like, how did... like, how do you have this lineup and then... Okay. Let me rephrase.
I don't know whether you're being sarcastic or not. That's the problem.
Because... I'm not being sarcastic at all, and I say that because it's hard to look at this movie and realize with the fact that you said it made like $99 million.
Yeah.
You know, and to know that it was like a blockbuster. It's hard to look at this and think, oh, you know, blockbuster. Also, a Christmas movie as a blockbuster.
Yeah.
It's pretty like different. Like usually, you know, your summertime hits are your blockbusters. You don't get one December 23rd of 1994 that is a 90 that makes triple its revenue, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But still, great cast.
Well, see, I mean, the reason why I was wondering whether you were being sarcastic is because like a lot of these people I know from nothing else.
Yeah.
Right? I do not recognize them at all. Like, you know, the fact that you've got a singer as one of your characters, it's, you know,
I feel like she's done a lot of acting though.
Has
you know?
She?
I'm going to look it up real quick because she was in.
Because she wasn't great in this. I'll have to say that. I mean,
she was in San Andreas. I never really watched that movie.
Oh, is that a rock one?
Yeah. That's
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Jack and Diane from 2012. She was in Blue, something called Blue. She was in a Doctor Who episode in 2007.
Okay.
You know, she
so maybe
was
she's
in...
gotten better. I mean, this is 1994,
oh,
Kylie.
She
Minogue.
Was the Green Fairy in Moulin Rouge. That's who she was.
Wow.
Okay.
I did not know that.
Neither did I. Huh. Oh, she was in Biodome.
Huh. Okay.
She was Dr.
I've seen
Petra.
It recently even. Yeah. Okay. And is Biodome after this?
Yeah, Biodome is so the Street Fighter obviously 94, Biodome was 96.
Wow.
So she definitely didn't travel too far up the ladder.
She's worked with a couple of the biggest punchlines of the 80s and 90s with
yeah.
Pauly Shore and Jean-Claude Van Damme. I mean, it's
and a Baldwin.
And a Baldwin, know? Yeah. She's got a Baldwin on
and
there.
And technically she did work with oh, I always forget her name. Nicole Kidman. That's it. Nicole Kidman.
Oh, and
Moulin
yeah.
Rouge, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a fan of Nicole Kidman. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get back to Street Fighter.
Okay. Keep us on track.
So yeah, we learn about the fictional country of Shadaloo, and we learn about the power-mad dictator M. Bison, and like all opening with this news story and everything like that. And we see that, like, you know, M. Bison is just a ruthless son of a bitch. He's just killing everybody and throwing them in a pit until he gets to Guile's buddy, Carlos.
Oh, my God. How much would you hate, like, how much would you hate your friend if he called you out in front of a violent, murderous dictator?
Dude, and chill. And,
like, shut the fuck up.
Cut it off. God.
Yeah, cut his mic. Somebody cut his mic.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. He just screwed his best friend over. Like, that. Like, you know what? It was probably because Kylie Minogue was married to Carlos, and Kylie Minogue, or Cammy, excuse me, Cammy and Guile were getting it on, and they were like, oh, shit. Can't wait to see you, Carlos. Chuck, we'll get you. Come back home safe and sound. Love you, buddy. Sorry, that's messed up.
I'll take care of him, Cammy.
Yeah, she's in good hands.
She's in good hands. Yeah. But, you know, I will say that watching this movie with what I felt like were fresh eyes, I did appreciate right off the bat that it's like, oh, they're going for it. Like, M. Yeah. Bison. Like, whereas, like, in the sequel, M. Bison is played by Neil McDonough, and he's gone for an Irish take, and the hat is not a thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's just, like, this very powerful businessman. So, it, you know, with this, I appreciate the fact that his hat always stayed on. He was full dressed to the nine. Like, the costumers had fun on this movie.
Absolutely. He embodied, like, it's just in this scene alone, he embodied, like, mad dictator.
Yeah.
And he definitely, you could tell he was, like, absolutely leaning into this role and making it come to life, like, for his kid or grandkid or whomever.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I like how at one point everybody ends up in some sort of near accurate, you know, like, game accurate costume.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, because when Ken and Ryu are first introduced, I'm like, ah, oh, fuck, what? You know, but later on, it's like, oh, no, there we go. We got a red headband and a karate gi going on. We're good now.
I'll say one thing, this movie moves very fast and very smoothly when it comes to, like, introducing the characters. You know, yeah. I didn't really feel like I didn't feel like this movie really drug or had any kind of drag at any one specific time. But it's funny, though, because we're, like, introduced to Guile and how badass he is because, you know, they're in this meeting and this assassin.
He grabs the mic like he's doing a WWF promo, you know. I'll take you on this Saturday in the ring.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, that was when he was talking to Bison, you know, like, saying, hey, like, we're coming for you, you know, and. Then we have the, like, the hackers moment where apparently M. Bison has the power to. Okay, so let me understand this. Okay.
Okay.
I'm looking at M. Bison because we're obviously, like, in his inner sanctum, and he's got, like, a futuristic. He's got, like, a flying platform. He's got all the technology. He can, like, hack into satellite feeds,
and he uses, you know, Street Fighter buttons as the control panel. Is that is that where you were going with this? Did I beat you to the end? Okay,
that too. But, like, I'm just wondering, they're literally fighting against, like, almost a third world country's military,
yeah,
and he can't win.
Yeah,
like, something's not adding up.
Yeah, well. You know, like you said, there's no backstory that was built for this. You know, you get the once you play the game through stories that you find out a little bit about the pitch, the characters. But, you know, you got to set it in this fictional country. And, you know, that's
let me ask you this. How is he funding this?
Okay. Well. I mean, if you control a country, I mean, you're powerful. Doesn't matter whether it's a dirt poor country or not.
True.
So the funding just, you get to print your own money, right? And when you're printing your own money, like, that's why Bitcoin works, isn't it? You know, like,
he did, and bison bucks were a thing, apparently.
Right. Exactly. That's how he was funding it, you know? I don't know. He's taking out loans.
That's from Shadaloo City Bank.
Calling up some pals in North Korea and Russia, you know? And that's how he funded it. He was going to pay them back with bison bucks.
Bison bucks, yep. Is this a joke? we as we continue through the movie, you know, we see, you know, like I said, we see how Guile's an absolute badass. You know, somebody has apparently sent a, no. So when did this happen? This happened after we were introduced to Ryu and Ken, right? The assassin. They do the introduction to, you know, M. Bison. And yeah. Then they do, like, the next thing should have been Ryu and Ken when they're selling the arms to
right.
Saget.
Yeah, it's Vega and Saget. We meet Vega and Saget because Vega is fighting.
Vegas in the he's in the octagon, yeah. brother. You yeah. know,
and they scam Saget with the toy guns.
Yeah. So yeah, the foam. Those weren't even Nerf guns. They were just like foam ball guns, which was stupid. but I did love. You know, the character, the guy who played Saget. I think he was a good choice because he definitely had the look. Yeah. Of Saget, and not necessarily the height, because the one thing about Saget was always like the tallest dude, had the most wicked reach, and could like just connect every hit. It was like the worst thing on the planet.
Yeah, it was like when you get to Mike Tyson and Punch-Out. Yeah, you know, yeah.
And then Vega, you know, Vega was always like jumping off the fucking fence, and I don't really feel like he did that necessarily in this game or in this movie, but whatever. You know, you can't be screen accurate everything, right?
But they tried.
They
which,
did.
I mean, which is great because the second one didn't try nearly as hard. But, you know, I gotta say, it bugged me when Chun-Li ended up in the red dress instead of the blue.
Very true.
That didn't feel right.
That was an unfortunate choice. Let's see what else. So I liked, again, I liked, after you know, after they capture, well, the whole thing is obviously, you know, it's they get caught trying to sell fake guns. Saget puts him in the ring with Vega, or puts Ryu in the ring with Vega.
Yeah, we get the cage match,
The cage match that doesn't go anywhere, and then all of a sudden, you know, Colonel Guile, who finds that it's okay to, like drive into a building with intercontinental ballistic missiles on the sides of his vehicle, and he just, like, smashes through a building and thinks,
willy-nilly.
This is a good idea.
Yeah, it's like he's out knocking mailboxes over. That's all it is to him. Whatever, it's a wall. You know, I'll just drive through that.
And not even a good, like, catchphrase when he comes out of the tank either. It's just like, you're all under arrest.
Yeah.
You know, he could have been like, I couldn't find the bell. You know, he could have been like, you know, did I come at a bad time?
Anything. You know? Yeah.
Bet you didn't bet on me showing up. Huh? Because they're all gambling.
Yeah. Well, that's not where I parked my car.
Okay, so yeah, then they get arrested, and then who is like, so yeah, guy, some, they send an assassin to kill Guile, and he finds out that it was one of Saget's dudes who tried to kill him, and then he's like, I got a great idea, let's make Ryu and Ken, who are both criminals,
part of the team.
Let's bring them onto the team. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe no wonder he's not winning the wars because his recruiting efforts are terrible.
Yeah.
You know, and then we find out that Ming-Na Wen as Chun-Li, Balrog and E. Honda, who are a news crew, are actually part of some kind of like resistance team.
I like the touch that every time E. Honda gets out of the van, it raises like, up.
Like, that's not fat shaming.
Now, okay, I want to see, the one thing I will give this movie credit for, especially for 1994, and it comes up on this show a lot because we're watching older movies, is that good on you, 1994, for actually doing diversity.
Yes.
I mean, obviously that's why you didn't make Ryu your main character, is because you weren't going to go all the way, but at least there was diversity. But you know,
at least you tried.
I want to do a special little segment here, Aaron.
Ooh.
Called Guess That Ethnicity.
Okay.
Guess That Ethnicity.
Okay, so
I'm ready.
In the video games, Ryu is
Japanese.
Okay, in this film, he is depicted as being
Malaysian,
Japanese American.
Ah.
Yes. Sorry, there are going to be hyphenates. Okay. And Byron Mann, who plays Ryu, is
Malaysian.
Chinese American.
Okay. All my answers are going to be Malaysian from now on.
So, E Honda in the game is
Malaysian.
No, he's Japanese.
I know. he's Japanese.
And in the film, he's depicted as
Hawaiian.
Samoan American, and that's because that's the same as the actor's ethnicity. Okay, Carlos Blanca is what in the game?
Brazilian.
That's right. Okay, and Carlos Blanca in the movie is
Malaysian. No, he's, I'm going to say, Argentinian.
He's also Brazilian. No, they did keep that one right, yes. And the actor, Robert Mammon, is... This one's a tough one. He's Australian. He's Australian.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Okay. So, I mean, okay. He didn't really speak too much, so.
So, Colonel Guile in the game is...
In the game is American.
In the movie is...
American?
Yeah, and... But Jean-Claude Van Damme is...
Malaysian.
Malaysian? What? Why? Belgian. He's Belgian.
I'm
kidding. Yes. Okay. Okay, what is Ken in the game? This one surprised me.
Ooh. Ken. Is he like... He's not like German, is he?
No, he's Japanese-American in the game.
No shit.
The blonde guy is supposed to be Japanese in the game.
Huh.
Yeah. In the movie...
See that coming.
In the movie, what is he?
He's white.
Well, he's
American.
He's American. Yeah, yeah. And Damian Chapman is...
Italian.
No, he's Mexican American.
God, I don't see color.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Okay, so Chun Li in the game is
Chinese.
Okay, and in the movie she is
Chinese.
Chinese American in the game.
Come on, it's close enough. I got half of it right.
There we go. But oh, it doesn't say what Ming Na Wen is. Oh, Malaysian. That one's missing off my list. There, she's Malaysian. There we go. I heard it here first. Zangief is...
Russian.
And in the movie?
Stupid.
Oh, well, there you go. And the actor is...
Ukrainian.
Polish, German, and Irish.
Wow.
Yeah.
PGI. Yeah.
So Dalsim is... Oh, this one's too hard. Is Anglo-Indian in the movie instead of being just Indian?
Oh, yeah. Anglo-Indian. Okay, yeah. Okay.
But it doesn't say what the actor is. Thunderhawk is...
Native American. Indigenous American.
Mexican-Indian. Yeah, Mexican-Indigenous then.
Okay.
In the game. In the movie, he is depicted as being American-Indigenous.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Whereas, and the Greg Rainwater, though, is Osage, Cherokee, Irish, and Filipino.
Wow, that is a mix. That is a grab bag.
Two different types of indigenous and a couple of European, yeah. That's a lot, yeah. Wow. Or, well, not even. Yeah, Filipino. okay, so Cammy is...
Ooh. This I have. Is she supposed to be American, right?
No, she's British in the game.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
Also what she is in the movie. But
yes.
Kylie Minogue is
Malaysian.
Australian.
Australian. Okay.
She's Australian. DJ.
Oh, he is. He's either Haitian or Jamaican.
He's Jamaican in the game and the movie. But Miguel A. Nunez Jr. is African American and Dominican descent.
Dominican, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Vega in the game and movie.
Spanish.
Yeah, both, but Jay Tavari is American Indigenous.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm super happy that they're like going like they're really reaching out in this one.
Yeah, and Victor Iron Fist Saget in the game is...
I want to say he's from Thailand.
Thai, yes. And
yeah, he's Thai.
Also in the movie is Thai. But Wes Studi is Cherokee.
Interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And this one is vague because it says M. Bison in this film is depicted as a possibly British general despite Raul Julia being Puerto Rican, but it doesn't say what he was in the game.
Yeah, that's interesting that he ever... I don't know if they ever, like, gave him, like, an origin. I'd have to do more research into that one. But yeah. He's Raul Julia. That's all that matters. He's Raul Julia.
Yeah. So, there we go. That's... Guess that ethnicity.
Guess that ethnicity.
I did find it very fascinating with the fact that it's like you said, they went for it.
Yeah. Yeah, but, good on Universal for back in the 90s, actually taking some time and, like... bringing in a lot of like indigenous and actual like, you know, people of, you know, color and making like a diverse cast, because you didn't get a lot of that in the 90s at all.
But it is interesting that none of them are right still, you know, like you got Correct. The Chinese guys playing Japanese and Asian is still Asian enough is kind of,
yeah,
maybe that was still going on in 94, but hey, at least they're still going for it. I mean, I guess there is the point of true to the film or true to the game. What matters more?
I will say this, though, like what I do like, though, is that none of these characters really had to like play into their portrayed ethnicity.
Yeah.
You know, like none of them put, like nobody put on like a crappy accent. Nobody like, you know, nobody had to be like overtly that, you know, ethnicity or nationality.
Yeah. You didn't have the Jamaican coming out saying, hey, man, DJ wasn't saying, hey, man, you know.
Yeah. Like he had the accent, but he wasn't being like an asshole about it.
Yeah. 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 He wasn't cool runnings it.
Yeah.
Thanks, coach. You know,
was it Dave Chappelle in Half Baked? I be from Jamaica. Where in Jamaica? Right near the beach, boy. God have mercy.
Oh boy.
He said, if I wasn't Jamaican, why would I wear this hat?
Oh God, Dave Chappelle.
Yeah. What else have we got?
So well, we have a bag labeled DNA mutagens is what we've got.
We do have that.
Because we've got, we did.
Anabolic steroids, I want to say.
Yeah, with all our, you know, Ryu and Ken getting recruited into the AN, you know, we do have to make sure that we get some Carlos Blanca and Dr. Del Sim with their DNA mutagens bag. And they're like clockwork orange torture for brainwashing.
I should like just take that video and like, you know, like hype, you know, what was it called? Like just superimpose like Fortnite montages that kids make these days and put up on YouTube. And just like,
that would drive me mad pretty quick. That's for sure. Yeah. My kids are obsessed with those kind of show things, you know, watching other people play video games. It's ugh.
So that was I don't know what the idea was behind this, because I honestly look at this whole facility and I think that M. Bison was like probably running out of money. Mm-hmm. Like he was just watching his like account number, like just dwindling. And cause he spent way too much on the lab and on his floating platform.
His levitating workspace. Yeah.
And so, It's
a standing desk. I mean, it's
exactly that. It's electric standing desk.
I mean, it would have been better if he had a yoga ball up there to sit on. Oh, I got to strengthen my core while I'm at it. Yeah. You don't win fights without a strong core.
Yeah. You think anybody wants to fight me when I wear these pants?
You know, he does some pretty impressive cape work, though. I mean, I gotta say, he flourishes that thing like nobody's business. I was impressed. It had me going, you know, more people should wear capes. There was, I was in Singing of the Rain, and there was one scene where my character had to wear an opera cape, and I'm like, this thing is cozy. It's heavy. No capes. It feels like a warm hug. And I'm like, maybe more people should adopt capes. And M. Bison has me looking at it going, it's fun. You can make a statement with a cape. You can put a exclamation point on your statement by flourishing that cape.
His outfit to me just looks so heavy.
Right? Absolutely.
That better be made out of like vinyl, like pleather vinyl. Mm-hmm. Because if that thing is actual like any kind of leather or like thick material, A, he's got to be sweating his ass off, and B, that thing's got to be weighing like 30-40 pounds for an outfit plus the cape.
Yeah, and he was sick at the time. I mean,
and he was sick at the time. Yeah, so yeah, that was always wild to me.
Like you always hear about how much some of the Marvel costumes weigh, and then you realize how much is digital later on.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, they learned how to get around certain parts of some of the costumes.
So I was actually watching Edge of Tomorrow, mm-hmm. if you've seen that, yeah. You know, Live, yeah. Die, Repeat. Emily Blunt, Tom Cruise, and Tom Cruise, when he was helping like them make that movie and kind of deal with the stunts, he told production, he's like, no, do not make the suits CGI. So he like spent his own money to actually get a lot of the suits made.
Yeah.
And they weighed like 80 pounds. And I think that one of the interesting pieces I saw was when Emily Blunt first put on her suit, her like exo suit or whatever, she just started crying because it was so heavy she couldn't move it. Yeah. And he said to her, he's like, stop being a pussy and get up.
Yeah.
So she said it was super motivating.
Yeah, I don't know if I would want to work with Tom Cruise if I was an actor in Hollywood. It seems like a bitch. Yeah, I know. It seems like it's a prestigious thing, but it does also. Yeah, it feels like a rite of passage in a way. Like if you want to do something really difficult, you got to do this, or you got to do a Wes Anderson film, or you got to do like there's certain people that it's like. That, I just that's feel a like certain anybody. Status.
Yeah, anybody that I feel like anybody that works with like Tom Cruise, like even like okay, so I was gonna say Van Damme. I don't think he really does his own stunts, but like Tom Cruise, who does all of his own stunts, I feel like everybody that's starring in a film with him is just like watching him constantly, and they're just like, "Dude's trying too hard." Yeah. Like, or they're feeling like really bad about themselves for not doing enough.
Yeah, yeah, and I feel like that would be like the approach of many people is it's like, oh well, if he can do that. Yeah. I can do this pussy little thing he's asking me to do. But meanwhile, I listen to enough podcasts where they're like, yeah, no, we didn't do that. That wasn't our stunt. Get your stunt guy to do it. They're paid to make it look like me. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. But whatever. He's a thrill seeker.
I
wish I was side of an airplane, rich enough to be a thrill seeker.
Yeah.
Or like Ryan Reynolds and the empire that he's building. I mean, I guess now he and Rob McElhenney have bought like a 25% stake in an F1 team or something.
Yep. Yep.
like, what the hell? Yeah.
When you got stupid money, you can just do whatever you want. So
when you got mobile phone money and aviation gin money and.
Unlike M. Bison or unlike Guile and his crazy task force that he needs to take down M. Bison.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what their outfits are actually supposed to be camouflaged to with the AN. You know, like they're pretty vibrant colored for trying to hide in the jungle.
Yeah, they're like a blue, maroon... light like a robin's egg blue, like just where are you trying to hide with that?
Yeah, you're not going swimming with those.
No, it's like you're gonna stand next to a bunch of like, you know, Easter eggs and try and blend in.
He won't see me in this bluebell patch.
But I will say this, though, the one thing that I that always irritated me was there's so the scene where Guile actually gets shot by I want to say by Ken.
Yeah.
Ken shoots Ryu, and this is like, you know, it ends up it is a ruse to get Ken and Ryu in with Sagat to get into, you know, M. Bison's good graces. Yes. But what happens is during the escape where Guile gets shot, Chun-Li has like takes her like lapel mic and turns it into a tracker real quick, does some kind of unnecessary somersault flip and throws it into the side of the truck.
Yeah, why not?
Like that somersault will always be the most unnecessary stunt I've ever seen in a movie.
See, I thought when you were going to say that there, you know, something that's always bugged you is the fact that for some reason Cammy is the only one whose pants doesn't have pockets. They have put Kylie Minogue in like stretch pants to help sexualize her a little bit, whereas everyone else has like standard cargo pant military garb going on.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I have never noticed that. I have absolutely never noticed that. And now I have to rewatch this movie or find a good photo of the final scene, because in the final scene they have their cool little jump pose. Oh my god, this is gonna bother me. You were right.
She doesn't have proper cargo pants on. She has like stretch pants. Yeah, gotta show that ass.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if E. Honda got pockets.
Yeah.
His pants are kind of tight. Ming-Na Wen for sure does not have pockets.
In her circus performance outfit?
Pretty much.
I like the fact that these people are not only newscasters and like secret spies, but they're also circus performers. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Where in spy school do they teach you how to be a circus performer?
I'm so blown away. I've never noticed that before. After my many years of enjoying this film, I never noticed that she didn't have pockets. God damn it. My world is crumbling.
Well, see, I noticed it in another movie too. That's why I noticed it in this case. I think it was Men in Black. Is that at the... No, maybe not. I was thinking when at the very end when Linda Fiorentino comes... Someone, yeah, there was one movie I watched where... Yeah.
there was a movie somewhere out there that was made where they didn't have pants with pockets.
Yeah, with pockets, yeah. They had different pants. Oh, no, it was Demolition Man. Sandra Bullock doesn't have regular cop pants. Everyone else does.
Sandra Bullock. Anyways.
So with the circus performance, I do want to say that I really love the touch of the Capcom on the label or on the barrel lid.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was nice. But I think that also means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. Always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, not very many. Street Fighter is brought to you by Capcom, Newsweek magazine, and the fictional GNT News. And I guess, Bison Box. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Figured I might as well slip that in there. Yeah.
But it should have been brought... I was going to say, should have done an advertisement for cocaine.
Yeah, cocaine.
And pocketless camo pants.
And pocketless camo pants, definitely. Well, it's an advertisement for pockets because she needed pockets.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Oh, man.
Okay, so Zangief, he became one of my favorites.
Oh, instantly.
Yeah.
Instantly. The big dummy.
The truck of dynamite rolling towards him. Quick, change the channel.
I have used that quote more times than I'm proud of.
Quick, change the channel. Really?
Yeah. Okay. And more often than not, it's never understood. The reference is never caught.
Yeah.
It's a very niche movie reference, but at the same time, it fits so many things. Could I give you an example? Absolutely not. But does it fit? Yes. Use it. Trust me.
Those that get it. Yeah.
Exactly.
As long as you got the one guy in 100 that gives you the, okay, I see what you did there.
Yeah. I still don't understand, though. I still don't understand. What? And this is, again, I understand M. Bison was facing some budget constraints due to his dwindling accounts, but he only made... one super soldier.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, he spent all the money on his kill room with the gas.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, yeah, he did have some money and he had to prioritize. He's like, well, the kill room, I mean, that kills a lot of people.
Yeah.
The super soldier still untested.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Rightfully so, because that was a failure.
But I gotta say, the doors on that kill room looked so flimsy to me. I'm like, oh, that's the plywood set right there.
Just run, get a running start and smash right through. And imagine just somebody like Van Damme, like when the movie was over, he's just running around like jump kicking like plywood walls.
Yeah, why not? Might as well.
Yeah.
He didn't get to do any of his splits between two counters in this game or in this movie. I mean,
or two chairs.
Yeah,
a good Time Cop reference, by the way. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I mean, of course, Guile refuses to obey orders. So the new orders that he gets, and so he convinces everyone in the Allied Nations to revolt. So now basically, we've got two different rogue armies going to battle. That's
so true.
Like, both of them are lawless entities. I mean, there's Bison, who is just, you know, declared himself king of this place. And...
Yeah. They're basically the same. They're the same guy.
Yeah. That's the rebel story of it. That's the script that he dusted off, and he's like, hey, this one will work. Because isn't there, you know, aren't there things like that in Commando? I mean, I think so. How about the Suicide Squad, where we've got them all killing off the rebels by accident?
Oh, yeah.
I guess that's two different armies. I don't know.
That's
such a
good scene.
I don't know. I just feel like M. Bison doesn't actually have any right to be there, right? Like, he's...
He doesn't. And the funny thing is...
He's not of this country.
There's a third party. You got M. Bison's army. You now have...
The Allied Nations.
The Allied Nations.
Not the United Nations. They're allied.
The Allied Nations. The Rogue Allied Nations Army. The Rogue Allied Nations Army. The RANA.
Yeah.
Okay? You got the RANA. You got M. Bison. And then you have the very small strike force of Chun-Li, Edmund, Honda, and Balrog.
That's right. I guess I did completely forget about the GNT news team.
Yes.
Coming to you live at 6. You know, and they're going to take down this faction as well. Yes, that's true.
And they answer to no one. They're the lawless news team. And they have... And they're all driven by one. Well, never mind. They're all driven by one motivation, but really it's two. Chun-Li, who M. Bison killed her father.
Yeah. So it's a revenge story. Yeah.
It's a revenge story, but she's working with Edmund Honda or E. Honda, and Balrog, who apparently are only in it because they want revenge against Sagat.
Yeah.
For ruining their careers.
Oh yeah, it's very twisty turny. Like, there's a lot of, it's a spy thriller, Aaron. Like, there's a lot of espionage going on, and you know, like, it's.
But who? I'm sorry.
Who's the double agent? Who's the, you know?
Who goes to assassinate a gunrunner for them ruining their career? Exactly. Thank you. That's all the only answer I need.
I have no answer. Absolutely. Just in case I decide to cut out some of that silence. No, there was no answer in there for you. Yeah. I guess Chun-Li does. There you go. Yeah. That's the only answer I've got.
That's the only answer.
Yeah.
So after
the GNT news team.
The GNT, the rogue GNT news team. Saving the world at 6 p.m. every night of the week.
Like, does it even ever say where she's... Like, is she CIA or is she really just on this revenge quest and she's recruited...
She is just on a revenge quest. She does not work for anybody.
Okay. Okay.
She has a no strings attached, no bullshit, badass bitch.
Okay. Okay.
With two helpers who are men.
Yeah.
So Guile knows that the GNT news team is on the mission and he tells them
the investigative journalism
are on the case. Guile tells them not to kill Sagat or Bison. But they go ahead and do it or go and try and do it anyways at that party / circus scene and fail.
Yes.
Because of who?
That's
right, Ryu and Ken. They did that.
Ryu and Ken, right. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So Ryu and Ken stop them, and therefore, after that, they're officially in, like, sin with M. Bison.
Yeah. Yeah, they got that going in.
They got that golden ticket for saving his life.
Yeah, well, that's all they ever wanted.
Yeah, and then the GNT news team, you know, they're, I keep saying GNT news team, but that's kind of redundant. It's like saying pin number.
Yeah,
I guess the global news team.
News team.
They're imprisoned.
It's like the people that LOLOLOL you, you know? It's
that's me.
Yeah? Okay.
That's me. I'm an LOLOLOLOL.
Yeah, see, if I get to the point where I want a multiple LOL, I do a ha 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 ha.
Oh. Yeah. So, I'm a LOLOLOLOLOL. So, yeah, they get imprisoned, and then Chun-Li gets taken to Bison's room.
Uh-huh.
Chained up.
Yeah, and he changes hats.
He changes hats and
changes
gets her
into his
outfit.
Evening wear hat.
His evening.
It's like Hugh Hefner, you know, with hats.
Yes. Yeah. Or the Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers with hats, yeah.
Oh, the evil dictator version of Mr. Rogers.
So Mr. Rogers. Oh, why would I come after Fred Rogers like that? Oh. That's wrong. No, Mr. Fred Rogers was a saint.
He was. He was. Yes. And a Marine, I think.
He was like I think he did something with mechanics, didn't he?
Yeah.
Wasn't he like a helicopter guy or something? I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway,
and...
yeah. So yeah, anyway, yeah. Okay, so Ken and Ryu, yeah, they saved the day with their truck of dynamite, right?
Mm-hmm.
No.
They stopped. Did they stop it or no? What did they do? I don't even remember that scene now.
Okay.
It skipped my mind. But they do save. Or I think maybe they get him out of the tent in time. They save Bison and Sagat.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they take him back to Bison's headquarters, like I said, where they imprison Honda and Balrog, take Chun-Li to his bedroom of horrors. Bison is, like, I think she gets free, starts fighting Bison. He escapes and then turns on his sex dungeon kill room.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Nothing sets the mood.
Like a sleeping gas.
A sex dungeon kill room. Yeah.
It only if done tastefully.
Yeah. And we also get Dal Sim changing Blanket's programming halfway through it.
I feel like the damage is done.
How did he get a hold of, like, you know, home videos? Showing home videos? Yeah. I'm trying to remember correctly, but yeah. Yeah.
That is a bit weird.
So Dr. Sim is also a master hacker or something like that?
I'm apparently everybody in Bison's, you know, like, rogues gallery is able to hack into new satellites and people's, like, whatever at that time was their ability to store, you know.
Yeah, with a Street Fighter Capcom arcade panel as your typewriter. Yeah, or as your keyboard. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pew,
yeah.
Pew, 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 pew. That guy over there is playing Galaga. You didn't think we'd know. But he is. Yeah, Dal Sim switches the programming. Dal Sim gets caught. I'm trying to remember. I feel like in my brain is telling me that once the facility is starting to, like, go up and, well, okay, I guess we should address the fight between Bison and Guile.
Yeah, I mean, really, this movie, for being called Street Fighter, does not have a lot of street fighting.
It doesn't.
Until
like
you get
one
to
street
the,
fight.
Yeah, until you get to the big fight with Guile and Bison at the end, where you finally get to see a couple moves that are a little video gamey. But mm-hmm. I mean, you've got them now dressed like they are in the video game, even though you've got the alternate colors for Guile, but whatever. You know, and you get to do, like, his scissor kick or whatever, his flipping scissor kick thing. But, like, you don't lean into any of the fireballs. And nope. I'm like, you're dressing them like it? Why aren't you, like, bringing that mystical aspect into it, too? At least Chun-Li, the Legend of Chun-Li, the second one, there is one moment at the end where she finally learns to throw a fireball.
It's like one fireball in that movie. I think I remember that.
Yeah. But, you know, this one, it's like, well, where's the Hadouken? Where's the, you know, tak tak to yak tak? Like, where's all that stuff? Like,
it's you guys racist, aren't... that's what it is.
But, no, I think that's like a name of one of our Northwest Territory cities here, actually. Yeah. There wasn't enough Street Fighter for me until this one fight with Guile and Bison, but no one threw a fireball.
So going to the screen or the video game, like, accurate stuff, they're one of the things that I really like. So can we address Blanca's just terrible makeup?
Yeah, oh, absolutely we can, because it is pretty bad. they tried, but they did not try hard enough.
They gave him like the worst practical effect, like just, I don't even know what you call that. It's like they took Play-Doh and like mashed it on his face and like poked like his nose. Like I'm looking at a picture right now and his nostrils were like the wrong sizes. Like he had like this caveman brow that's clearly fake.
Yeah.
It's like, it's terrible. It's so bad.
So bad. And, you know, unlike a movie like Batman and Robin, wow, there's a poll for me, but where they take someone skinny and transform him into the massive Bane, here they took an average sized guy and put enough prosthetics on him, hoping that it would bulk him up, but it doesn't bulk him up. No. Like, it's, they did not do enough. Like, at least, you know,
so bad.
They should have switched the actor halfway through or something.
Much like M. Bison, the production team spent all their money on a platform desk. And a yoga ball.
And a yoga ball. And they're like, hey, we've got this silly putty. Sculpt something with that.
Yeah. Hey, borrow that from your kid. Christmas.
Make his brow bigger.
Yeah.
It's Christmas.
It's in his stocking. Just grab it and put it on. Okay. One thing I thought was great was also Sagat gets his chest cut across, just like he gets the scar like he has in the game, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Now this is the downside of me watching the other movie. Was it this one or the other one or both where Vega ends up getting his claws snapped like he does in the game when you're like close to beating him?
I want to say it was the other one, because in this one he goes from like bamboo claws to like actual metal claws in this one. And I don't think they get snapped.
Okay.
There's a pretty badass boat scene that makes no sense, but.
Yeah. Well, apparently when they were filming in Vietnam, they weren't allowed to do an aerial assault. The Vietnam wouldn't let them use the airspace, so they had to switch it to a boat assault.
Oh, yeah, because they said, didn't they say in the beginning they're going to do like an air, land, and sea assault? And then I guess nobody went back and refilmed that part of the movie.
Yeah.
Which would have been really easy.
or even just cut out the word air.
Yeah.
And I guess there was a lot of continuity problems because half of this was filmed in Australia and the other half was filmed in Vietnam.
Huh.
And when they were in Vietnam, they were all sick or something. And so they were losing a bunch of weight also because of like the humidity and the heat and everything like that.
Oh, damn.
So yeah, there's different scenes where they're in better shape than they are in the jungle scenes. And I gotta say, I mean, we were talking about Blanka's makeup a second ago. I'm not a fan of whoever did the tattoos.
Yeah, true.
I mean, both you and I have a tattoo, or have tattoos, and we know how quickly they can fade. You know, and start to look weathered. These ones, they looked like they were freshly drawn on. His American flag and his, and, you know, there was also a couple other guys that had tattoos that were supposed to have some meaning, I guess, that they were part of some brotherhood or something, but that never really was much of a story. Just two guys that happened to have the same tattoo at one point, but they looked freshly drawn on, and it's like,
they look like those tattoos that you get. Like on hot, like kids would get like from the books or like the little 25-cent machines, and you just like get them wet.
Yeah. You can still see the sheen of the rest of the plastic, you know. Where it's see through. Okay, here's a question, and I this is just something I've always been curious on a military uniform. Why is the American flag backwards?
So technically it's not backwards, but basically the way that it is the field of stars is in the front, towards the front of the uniform, because it would be as if you're running towards battle.
Okay. So it's just, you're looking at the reverse side of the flag. Then,
yeah,
I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you look up the flag on anything, it's always stars in the upper left. So that's why I've always wondered on, Okay. Huh. The more you know.
So I gotta say, the you know what? I think the last of the budget of M. Bison and this movie went into his suit. because he's able to fly, shoot electricity. He's basically the Emperor. He's basically Emperor Palpatine. Let's just admit that he's basically Emperor Palpatine.
Oh, yeah. Unlimited power!
That was probably the first thing he had built for himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, well, actually, no, it was probably the platform first. He's like, you know, this platform is handy, but I can't get into those tight spaces with it. It is bulky. I need something that's just me.
I gotta be honest, though. Like, his shoes, his glowing shoes, when they're, like, in flying mode, are pretty badass.
Yeah. I gotta say, I like the idea of, like, a defibrillator suit.
Yes.
You know, something that can resuscitate me? Okay.
I mean, James Bond didn't even have one of those.
Yeah.
Casino Royale? God. You know, he had to go into his car and, like, hook that shit up.
Yeah.
Man, Kylie Minogue was cute in this movie. I will say that.
She was. I just,
even though she had no pockets.
I still had no pockets. I still couldn't get behind her her acting, though.
Yeah.
It was rough.
Well, apparently her and Van Damme had an affair, right?
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I didn't see that one. I will say there were some moments I did find funny in this movie. I like Guile pulling the knife on everybody. And them all backing off, and then you realize that it's the they're behind me moment.
Yeah,
I thought that was played well. Like, that's the thing, is there were fun moments, and like they tried, but they didn't go all in.
Yeah,
no matter what, you know, like, you know, Zangief and E Honda end up in a fight, and they end up in like the tiled room. So it's like, oh, okay, you're in E Honda's, you know, simulated space.
Yeah, there was like I said, I mean, just like that, there were some good like little nods to the video game that really were just fun, you know. And like when they were doing the fight, it was very like almost like 2D, you know, when he kicks him in the head and he does his little spinning kick.
Yeah,
you know, that was pretty awesome. I just feel like, yeah, there was like, this is one of those places that, or one of those, I guess, topics in the movies where they really did kind of play it a little bit safer than what, I mean, and it's funny saying that, because then I go back to the beginning of our conversation of this movie when they're talking about how M. Bison was just murdering like innocent civilians, like right from the beginning. And then we go into like what we're talking about, them playing it safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true. They shocked you right off the beginning, and then they're like, okay, we'll pump the brakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess this movie almost got a G rating, but they threw in like an F bomb from Guile to make sure that it got PG-13.
Oh.
Because they're like, oh, no one's going to want to see a G rated movie. It's like, well, the action is a little slow. It's a little clunky. So, I mean, you could have also upped the action factor. Like, I guess there were problems with the choreography for some reason, with shooting schedules, and part of it had to do with Raul Julia's health. And so the choreography wasn't as in place as they would have liked it to be. So I can understand why they might have played it safe in some of the fight scenes. But when you look at anything that Marvel puts out, or anything that has come in recent years where you're seeing big fight scenes, big John Wick set pieces, Mortal Kombat set pieces, you know, and the action in this one, by comparison, it's kind of like, oh, okay, you know. You swing now. Now I'll swing. You swing. I'll swing.
Yeah.
Like, it feels very choreographed. Like, very, like, I don't know. It's not as visceral.
There's definitely a few scenes where you see, like, people kind of going out in the background where it's just like,
Yeah. It's so, they, you know, with what I've seen now, it's like, well, okay, they could have had more street fighting in the Street Fighter movie, but if there really were all these problems going on with stuff behind the scenes,
absolutely. I think for the issues that they had, I mean, I think it went a lot better than it could have been. I mean, this is not like a terrible movie. This is not one that I'd be like, oh fuck, Street Fighter's on again. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you just have to really enjoy the B movie quality of it. Like, it, the acting is on like a Sharknado level.
Yeah,
really. Yeah. Like, it's almost that level of camp.
It's like dialed up. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
Well, it says, so I'm reading into the movie, and it says D'Souza stated that he did not want to make a generic martial arts movie, and he described his film. is a cross between Star Wars, James Bond, and a war film. In addition, he indicated that he also did not want to shoehorn in elements from the games, citing the previous year's poorly received Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, but Super Mario Brothers does nothing from the game. So how you could see think that, you know, shoehorning yourself into the game. No, it didn't work with Mario Brothers. That's the problem. But that's a discussion for another time. But yeah, I mean, I something like Mortal Kombat, you have Scorpion throwing a thing and saying, "Get over here." You know, you've got you've got those supernatural aspects. You've got people's heads lighting on fire. Why not lean into the absurdity? Why not have Chun-Li do her rapid fire kick, or E-Honda do his 100-hand slap, or, you know?
I have the answer for it for you.
Okay.
D'Souza said, that he avoided the supernatural elements and powers from the games, but would hint at their use for a sequel.
Okay.
So he was really aiming for a sequel.
Well, see, I think that's the dull sim of it all, for sure. Because he gets some of those dangerous chemicals poured on his arms, and it's like, oh, now he's bald. His arms are all, like, have this dangerous DNA mutagen on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to have his stretchy ability. He's going to be able to yoga fire.
That would be awesome. I did not know this, but did you know that there is a post-credit scene?
Yeah. Yes, there is. Showing that M. Bison is not dead.
I never knew that! Again!
Apparently it wasn't in the theaters.
Yeah.
It was something that was only brought in for, like, the video release, or maybe even the DVD release or something. But
I own this movie!
Yeah.
And I've never seen that!
I've just made it a habit to sit to the end.
Yeah.
With the every movie that I've done, and I get surprised so often. And this was one of them. This was one of them.
Yeah, I need to look that up, because I actually have never seen that before.
Yeah,
that's so interesting.
Yeah, it wasn't much, but
it's still something, you know. And you want to know, you want to see it.
Yeah, like I did read several things about the fact that there was the sequel planned, and Van Damme was going to come back. They were going to recast Kylie Minogue for some reason, but there were a few people that were going to come back. But yeah, it was. They were hoping for a sequel, but it just never happened.
Oh, shit. I'm reading now that Van Damme revealed later that, like you said, he had a drug problem, and he did, like, $10,000 worth of cocaine a week.
Oh, yeah. And I wasn't joking when I said that. Yeah.
And he had an affair with Kylie Minogue, and it says that the director, the studio hired a wrangler to keep an eye on Van Damme.
Yeah. Yeah, to keep his coke use in check.
Yeah, but they said that the Wrangler was actually a bad influence himself.
Yeah, that may explain, though, the WWF promo microphone grab that he does. And
yeah.
Oh, no, he was coked up in that moment. That's coked up, Van Damme. I'm coming for you, Mbaze, and I'm coming for you. Anyone else hot? Fuck.
Yeah. Oh, it's my jelly beans. Where's my special jelly beans?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, there's only like five pieces of trivia for this movie, which is funny. You would think that there's a whole lot more, but there's not.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. I don't think I have anything else.
No, I mean, I think that we covered just about everything. We covered, you know, the fact that this was, like I said, I mean, after everything's said and done, rewatching it, you know, it's there's so much to this movie that you can enjoy, like, just going through even the plot itself. Looking for plot holes, the references to the game, and then just the acting styles of everybody is so interesting and just across the board different.
Yeah.
And it's not bad. You can't say it's great, but it's not bad.
Yeah. There were moments where they had fun with it, for sure.
I mean, Van Damme did.
Yeah.
$10,000 a week worth of it.
Well, there we go. That's Street Fighter. Now, Aaron, on IMDb, it scored 4.0 out of 10. Has a Metascore of 34. Oh, Rotten Tomatoes, not as kind. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 11% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 20%. But, Aaron, those are just numbers. Like a Van Damme kick to the chin... hit us with some reviews. Blade kick to the chin. Blade kick to the chin.
Nice. So Emmanuel Levy, who is a top critic on Rotten Tomatoes, says the game is the movie is far less captivating than the video game that inspires it. Justin Brown, who is medium popcorn, said, "This is probably one of the worst things I have ever seen. Even as a kid, I thought it was bad. I never want to watch this again."
Aww.
Another top critic on Rotten Tomatoes, Megan Navarro, said, "Even knowing what a Met Street Fighter is, I will defend it to the end of time for what Raul Julia brought to the film." Good on you, Megan Navarro. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chelsea Stark from Polygon says, "For a product of its time, a decade full of video game inspired stinkers, it's worth looking back on, especially because it's obvious how much fun the cast is having."
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely true. And
$10,000 worth.
Exactly. Right on. Exactly. I mean, again, you know, we're watching it, we're having a good time with it. And, you know, like we said, there's just the overall rating of this movie and what people are saying about it is that it's a middle of the road, like, piece of shit to watch. You know, yeah. it's not like shitty, you know,
it's not
good.
A thinker.
It's not a thinker. Yeah,
definitely not a thinker. Yeah.
I bet you it's really fun if you're stoned.
A little bit.
Soon.
Right. Right on. Is that all you got?
That's all I got for you. That's nice. It for the ratings of this movie, which, again, like I said, it's pretty much middle of the road, you know, except for Rotten Tomatoes, who, like, pretty much, oof, they just couldn't
keep. They really didn't like it, yeah.
They didn't. 11 from the tomato meter and an audience score of 20% with 50,000 plus ratings. That's harsh.
That is.
It's not that bad, that's people.
Rough. It's not that bad. Yeah. Right on. Yeah, so, yeah, for me, it was, it's a terrible movie, but I had fun with it. Like, I just wish they had really gone for it.
Yeah.
I will say Street Fighter II, The Legend of Chun-Li, is, the fighting is better, but the movie is worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. The action scenes are better choreographed in that one. But yeah, that's definitely not a good movie. I had fun with this one. I didn't really have fun with the other one. It also helped that the version of the second one that I found didn't have subtitles. And there's a lot of times that they're speaking various languages in that movie. There's at least four different languages on display in that movie.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
Yeah. And I could not find one with subtitles. So anyway, but with this one, yeah, it was fun. I had fun. It brought back all my years of playing Street Fighter, where I'm like, oh, yeah, right on. They did that, right? Because whether I've seen this or not, if I have seen it, it's been so long since I have that I had forgotten this movie for the most part, that I appreciated the Easter eggs. I bought what they were selling because I could see what they were trying to sell me, and mm-hmm. I took it anyway. It was all fan service and I was happy with it. I wish they had just gone for it though. Really, really gone for it. Aaron, this time around, Street Fighter.
I'm going to say, like, this movie is still fun to watch. To this day, it's fun to watch. It's fun to, like, you, as your tastes change, as you get older, as you notice more, as you pay attention to people's faces, their mannerisms, like, there's so much to this movie because there's so much in it. Yeah. You know, it's visually fun, it's ridiculous fun. It's a popcorn flick that you can just have fun with anybody that you're watching with, whether you like sci-fi, whether you like fighting movies, whether you like spy movies, war movies. Like, I feel like this movie has something for just about everyone, as long as you love, like, a ridiculous flick, yeah. You know? And so for me, you know, again, I think this is going to always going to be one of those movies that kind of stands the test of time because it doesn't ask for too much from you.
No, that's, you know, true. It doesn't.
And there's, and from that era, from the mid 90s, like, the 90s was a great era for, like, over the top, like, fighting films, science fiction films, just Hollywood, I think, in this era was really embracing a lot of what like foreign films were doing mm-hmm. in their exaggeration. So I really dig, like, again, like, especially the fact that this was filmed in Australia and had so many different like nations that were kind of involved with it. Like Tank Girl, if you ever watched Tank Girl, absolute ridiculous film, but it was from the same era. Mm-hmm. The Guyver, if you ever want a good sci-fi fighting movie that's over the top and insane, The Guyver. Like there's some really good ones, and honestly Street Fighter really does fit in that realm perfectly, and it's one of the better ones, I will definitely say, and it's mm-hmm. enjoyable. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. Definitely a recommend for me.
Yeah, see, when it comes to between this and Mortal Kombat, right, because I'll consider this a first-time watch. I mean, if they're both first-time watches for me, I don't know which one I had more fun with. And yeah. Part of that is because Mortal Kombat did go for it.
It did.
It did go for the absurdity, but this one had a better story, strangely enough. There was actually kind of a fun story in here.
Yeah.
But to me, I had the outside feeling of, you know, this would be a good movie if it was starring some of the cast of The Expendables back in their prime. You know, a good old Stallone, Lundgren, Schwarzenegger, Weathers movie. You know, that kind of thing. But
that is a good point. Those two movies up against each other, it's a hard one to choose who wins.
Yeah, but I did have a lot of fun with this. And, you know, whatever. I didn't hate it. Yeah, if you haven't seen Street Fighter, yeah, why not go watch it? Especially if you like the source material. Why not? It was fun to shut off my brain for a bit and just go along for the ride, you know?
Change the channel!
Quick, change the channel. Like a truck full of dynamite. Well, yeah, so there we go. That is Street Fighter, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, tell people or go to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars, give us a review, like, subscribe, share, all that sort of stuff. Or if you want to be a financial supporter of the show and just throw us a couple bucks a month, well, you go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. You become a patron of the show, and then you're an executive producer, so you get a shout-out, just like executive producer Joshua Blum. See, I'm trying to tighten up those credits a little bit. You like that? That was yeah. That was swift. Swifter was. Today. Yeah.
So if you want to contact or donate to the show, you can always email us at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com, or go over and follow us on social media, IUsedToLikeThisOne on Instagram. And there's another one with numbers that's on Twitter. Social media, you can get the heads up of what our next movie is, and you can also watch it ahead of time so you can kind of keep up with our conversation and have a good time with us.
Yeah, remind yourself of these old, old movies. I Used to Like This One is hosted by and produced by Sean Wells and Aaron Knowles. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. And if you want to hear more from me and my stories of my day job as a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. And Aaron, where can people find you doing your own other stuff?
Check me out on shredthestress.org or at shredthestress on any social media platform, or check out my other show, which is the Oblivion Bar Podcast. And you can find us at Oblivion Bar Pod on pretty much any platform, any podcast platform that you go to. We're there, and just a couple of nerd buddies just like this show, talking about movies and comics and everything. So go check us out.
Right on. So video game month, Aaron, here we are. Yeah, we got Street Fighter, and I mean, we already name dropped our next movie, but yeah, mm-hmm. what do we have coming up next?
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We got the Super Mario Bros.
Do 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 do. Yes, I can't wait. Super Mario Brothers, not the Super Mario Brothers movie. We can't mistake that for the Super Mario Brothers movie, which is far more faithful to the source material.
I am so excited to watch this movie. This is one I've been waiting on for a long time. I've needed the excuse to pick it up again.
Yeah, I can't wait, because this is just like Street Fighter. I'm not sure if I've seen this one. I don't know if this is one that I actually did see when I was younger.
You gotta love that, the mysterious, like the mystique behind it, you know?
Yeah, there's a certain aspect of me where it's like, sometimes you know enough about something that it's like, yeah, no, I've seen that. Like, you've talked about it with people enough that you feel like you saw it. But I've been lying to people for years. There's some movies that...
I'm a liar.
I know. I know about all the major events of Tootsie and The Graduate. I've never seen either of those movies. I mean, you know, things like that. I don't know. Yeah. It's just... So maybe I just know enough about Mario, or we'll see. Yeah. I can't wait. Can't wait.
Mario, I'm excited too, man.
Oh, you know, and something that I brought up at the end of our last episode, but never actually got around to this one. How cool would it be now that, like, Marvel and everything owns, or Disney owns them, to do, like, a Marvel Street Fighter crossover? That's how they need to reboot Street Fighter, is the Capcom versus Marvel, huh? Shared universe?
Just do a whole Capcom movie universe. Like, have... Yeah, have like Monster Hunter.
Oh, Sonic
Street
can
Fighter.
Show up.
Yep, yep. And Resident Evil.
Right on. Well, there you go. Thank you for listening. And join us next week when we take a look at Mario Brothers. Super Mario Brothers. Or is it Super Mario,
Mario
Bros.
Brothers?
Super Mario think, Bros.
Yeah, Super Mario.
Super Mario.
It's got the Super Mario. Super Mario and the Brothers. The Super Mario.
See, we've been trying for like 3 years now to do a good Chris Walken, and none of us can. You've come the closest there.
Thank you. Yeah. What I'm saying is that the Mario Brothers are Super Mario. The brothers were super.
Right on. Join us next time when we take a look at Super Mario Brothers. And I used to like this one. Oh, I love it. Yeah, we can't get in there. We can't get into the...